Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Nun Gimel in Psachim, and we're beginning on the bottom of Nun Beis Amud Beis. We still will start with a story. Before we get to the story, we're in the fourth parak of Psachim, which means that we're discussing Menhagim. Right, the fourth parak of Psachim starts with the minhag of not working on Erev Pesach, meaning after Chatzos on Pesach already there's a din. There is a halacha that one shouldn't do malacha, not like a yantiv. It's not isra malacha like yantiv. It's much more like chol hamoed. But still, there's some form of isra malacha in the afternoon of Erev Pesach. What about the morning of Erev Pesach? So that's contingent on a minog. And what we're going to be discussing over the course of the fourth parak, very interesting fourth parak, although it's not that long, is menhagim. We're going to discuss menhagim in general, whether or not which menhagim are to be followed, which menhagim are not to be followed, and menhagim are really connected to the makom, meaning where you're from is going to depend on minhag. Right? Historically, we know that over the course of the last, let's say, 800 years, maybe less, so there have been basically two menhagim that have been produced from the Jewish people, menhag Ashkenaz, menhag Sfardin. That's really an oversimplification. It gets much more complicated than that. But in other words, but the whole idea of minhag really starts much earlier. This whole idea of minhag starts already. It's going to take us back to the times of the Gemara, and even earlier than the times of the Gemara. This idea that minhagim, there are certain minhagim that are attached to certain communities. So the first minhag that was discussed was the minhag of not working on Erev Pesach, and again, specifically the morning of Erev Pesach. The afternoon, already that's a din, that's a halacha. But the morning of Erev Pesach, some communities did not have a minhag where you worked. And then the Gemara went into a discussion of what if you're going from a community that doesn't work to a community that does, or just the opposite. What if you go from a community that does work to a community that does not work? Fine, that's the first mishnah of the fourth parak of Psachim, which then is going to launch the entire fourth parak of Psachim into a discussion of various menhagim. One of the other things that we discussed was Perish Shavias. So that also came up in the first mishnah, and so therefore we're continuing a discussion today that we already engaged in yesterday, and that is this halacha Perish Shavias. This is not a minhag. This is really more a halacha, but the Mishnayos, the reason why it came up in our Mishnah is because it also is connected to this idea of what if I go from a place where there are fruit to a place that aren't fruit, and what if I go to a place that isn't, that there aren't fruit, to a place that there are fruit. Now, what is the halacha regarding Perish Shavias? So the halacha is as follows. We know that during the seventh year, you're not allowed to work the land. That's called Shemitah. Okay, it's coming up. When is it? Next year? Right? 2 years. Right. Not this coming year?
3 years.
Right. 2 years in this Rosh Hashanah. So fine, so Shemitah, it's always coming up, but it's pretty soon. So during the Shemitah, you're not allowed to work the land. What about the fruit that grows on the tree during that year? So the fruit that grow on the tree during that year have Kedusha Shvius. They have sanctity. Now what does that mean? It means we're allowed to eat it. You're allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to export it outside of Eretz Yisrael. That was yesterday's stuff. We discussed a little bit of that yesterday. Yeah, you can eat it. But first of all, you're not allowed to waste any of it. In fact, we're going to be talking about that right now. That's the halacha of hefsid. You're not allowed to waste any of it. You have to eat it. You can't do commerce with it. The only thing you're allowed to do is you're only allowed to eat it. And the other thing, the last thing about Perish Shavias is that it's got a shelf life. Not just its natural shelf life like any fruit, but it's got a shelf life in terms of when it has to be destroyed. Now, the word destroyed is not an accurate term to describe it. It's what's referred to in the Mishnayos as biur. It has to go through this process of biur. Now, biur, the Rambam understands it very literally. The Rambam says biur like biur chametz, meaning it has to be destroyed. That's the way the Rambam understands it. A lot of Rishonim don't agree with the Rambam. The Ravid doesn't agree with the Rambam. The Ravid says that biur just simply means you have to be mafkir it. All you have to do is just let it lay ownerless. Either way, the point is that when I get to Perish Shavias, so it has Kedusha and it can be eaten, but it has to be only eaten and nothing else. Okay? And when and at what point exactly can I no longer eat it? Meaning when is it subject to this halach of beer? So, as we learned already from the beginning of the parak, and I'm just reiterating, the time that it has to that can only be eaten is until it is still in the field. Once it is no longer in field, once it's no longer current in the field, meaning the season is over, so then I can no longer eat these peros shvis. And then it's subject to this halacha of biur. Okay? We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Okay, that's just a very broad introduction to our Gemara that we're about to see. We're on Nun Beis, Amud Beis, and now we're going to be starting with the words of Rabbi Elai. It's about, I'll say, a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud on Nun Beis, Amud Beis. The Gemara starts off. It's the third word in the line. Rabbi Elai cuts kaf neyasa deshvius. So what did Rabbi Elai do? He cut these young trees during the Shemitah year. Now, cutting the trees down presents its own set of very interesting problems. You're not allowed to cut fruit trees down. In fact, if you were listening to last week's Parsha in Shul, so you'll know that one of the last things mentioned in the Parsha is that you're not allowed to cut any fruit tree down. That's what's called Baal Tashchis, that's destruction. And so that's... our Gemara right now is not going to be discussing that issue at all. Interesting that our Gemara does not bring up that issue at all, but our Gemara does not. Our Gemara is just going to be focusing on it from the perspective of Peir Shvias. So, what did Rabbi Elai do? He cut down the Kafnayasa during the Shemitah year. So the Gemara jumps on this, again, not from the, you're not allowed to cut fruit trees down, but just simply, hey, it's Shemitah, you're not allowed to do that. I don't understand. Once fruit has Kedusha Shvias, so then you have to eat it. And what he's doing is, by cutting the tree down, using it for the wood, is he's wasting all that fruit. But that's not just fruit, that's Peir Shvias fruit. So you're not allowed to do that. V'chite mahani mile heichedenachas lepeire. So the Gemara says, well, maybe you want to argue, that's only if the fruit gets to a developed stage. See, if you go back to the beginning of where we started, Rabbi Elai cuts kafnayasa. Kafnayasa refers to a fruit, but at a very underdeveloped stage. Now, exactly how underdeveloped it is, I don't know. Now we're going to be really going into some fruit talk, which I'm really not, I don't know a whole lot about. But the point is that they were underdeveloped, and the Gemara now is going to try to make the argument, well, since the fruit on the tree were underdeveloped, or not yet developed, so therefore there's no issue of destroying the fruit. It doesn't have Kedusha Shvias as of yet. The Gemara says, yeah, I'll tell you what's difficult with that approach, and that is the statement of Rav Nachman, where Rav Nachman said, Hani matchili da arla asire. You have matchili. Now Rashi explains that matchili, again, we're going back to fruit, really underdeveloped fruit. Rashi, shomer, second wide line of Rashi, shomer hagadel svivas ha-tamarim bikatnam, the growing around the dates, some sort of protective layer growing around the dates at a very early stage of development. Kein pikas hagadel svivas egoz ya'ar. He gives other nuts to give us some sort of context in terms of how to understand it. I don't understand it. But the point is as follows. They're really underdeveloped, and yet they're subject to the prohibition of Arla. Now, Arla, like Shvias, is that it only applies to the fruit, not to the tree. The point is that even though the fruit is at a very underdeveloped stage, nevertheless, it's subject to the Isser of Arla. And same over here. Meaning by the Isser of Shvias, by Kedusha Shvias, not the Isser of Shvias, but by Kedusha Shvias, even at a very underdeveloped stage, it's subject to Isser of the Kedusha Shvias. Hovanasu Shamalapri, Vishamalapri, Emas Havi Bikufri. Now, the Gemara says, now when do we get to the stage? We get to the stage at Kufri. And again, this idea of Kufri is it's a date, but still at a very underdeveloped stage. Vekakarilu Pere. And it has the status of a fruit. So now, it all goes back to Rav Elai. Look, the whole Gemara starts with Rav Elai. He cut this tree down during the Shemitah year, even though you have these fruit growing on the tree, and even though the fruit has Kedusha Shvias, and the only thing you're allowed to do with that fruit is eat it, and it seems like he's dismissing this whole idea. And the Gemara is basically asking how. The Gemara is suggesting, well, maybe the fruit's at a very early stage, and the Gemara dismisses that because we know that even fruit in early stage is subject to the Isser of Arla, and is also therefore subject to the Kedusha Shvias. So Rav Nachman, Damrik, Rav Yossi, so the Gemara, in defense of Rav Elai, says, oh, you know, Rav Nachman's holding like Rav Yossi. Now, as we're going to see in just a moment, there's a machlokas tanayim. And what the Gemara now is going to propose is that Rav Nachman, who was machmir, took Rav Yossi shita, But and what Rav Eli did is he went in accordance with those who disagree with Rav Yossi. So what the Gemara is now going to suggest, and that's not an elegant suggestion, but it's a suggestion, is that really maybe this machlokes between Rav Nachman and Rav Eli, who are Amorayim, are really contingent on a machlokes Tanayim. So the Gemara launches into this discussion. Rav Nachman, the Amak Rav Yossi, the Nan Rav Yossi Omer, Smadar Asr Mimneshu Pri. Upligi Rabban Allah. Rav Yossi, the Gemara quotes a mission in Arla. Rav Yossi is of the opinion that when you get to Smadar, really early stages of the fruit. Smadar is like the blossoming of the fruit. Already at that point in time, it's considered a fruit, subject to the prohibition of Arla. And again, the Gemara just assumes that if it's subject to the prohibition of Arla, if it's fruit legabe Arla, it should also be fruit legabe shvius as well. So maskal Rav Shimon ben Aradal mi pliga Rabban Allah Rav Yossi. So the Bishar Ilano. So the Gemara says, now you just assumed that the Chachamim argue with Rav Yossi. Is that true? Vatanan, the Gemara says, yeah, but what, consider the following. We have a Mishnah in Shvius, and the Mishnah says, Meimasai in Kotzin as Ilana b'Shvius. At what point are you not allowed to chop trees down during the Shemitah year? Again, during the Shemitah year, once you have fruit on the tree, the fruit is subject to Kedusha Shvius. And the only thing you can do with it is eat it. You are not allowed to do anything else, not sell it, and not let it go to waste. So at what point is it considered fruit? So Beit Shammai takes a very simple position. The moment it starts budding, the moment the buds come onto the tree, at that point precisely, it's going to be subject to Kedushas Shvius. That already is considered a fruit vis-a-vis Shvius. If you take a look at Rashi, the bottom line of Rashi, Mishiotziu, Tchilas Ha'alim Bimi Nisan. Right? During the month of Nisan, we go out, we see the trees blossoming, so we make a bracha, and Beit Shammai will tell you, not only do we make a bracha, but Beit Shammai says, you know what? That's a fruit. Meaning, if it's within the first 3 years, it's Arla. If it's during the Shemitah year, it's subject to Kedusha Shvius, meaning that's considered a fruit. That's Shitas Beit Shammai. Now, obviously, we don't hold like Beit Shammai. Okay, but watch what Beit Hillel is about to say. Beit Hillel Omrim, Hacharuvim Mishiyasharshru. So Beit Hillel is going to say, look, it depends on what kind of tree it is. If it's a boxer tree, so Mishiyasharshru. Now, that normally means when it takes fruit. That can't be what it means over here. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says that the fruit that are growing on the boxer are like linked like a chain. That's how Rashi explains Mishi Sharsharu. Hagefanim Mishi Yagriu. And when it comes to the grapes, when you start seeing little grapes on the vine, the Hazesa Mishi Yanitsu, when it comes to olives, when you see little olives start developing. Vishar Kol Ilanos, and when it comes to any other tree, so in other words, by the boxer tree, by the grape tree, and by the olive tree, so you got to start seeing the fruit. But when it comes to any other tree, according to Beis Hillel, Mishi Yotziu. Already the moment that you have a budding of any type of fruit, so at that point in time, it's already subject to the mitzvah, it's already considered now a fruit, and in terms of Shvius, it's now going to have Kedusha Shvius. So now again, we go back to Rabbi Eli. Rabbi Eli had some sort of date tree where the dates were at a really early stage of development. He cut the tree down, and the Gemara's trying to defend his position, but now we've just shown a Mishnah and Shvius where we have Shitas Beis Hillel, where if it's not a boxer or an olive or a grape tree or a grape vine, at the moment it starts budding, it's considered a fruit and it has Kedusha Shvius. So really now we lack any defense for what Rabbi Eli did. Now before we answer or try to defend Rabbi Eli, the Gemara just goes and explains a little bit more. V'amr Ravasi, hu boster, hu girua, hu pul halavan. So Ravasi says that boster and girua and pul halavan are all the same size. Now pul halavan is akadachan, and the Gemara just quickly jumps. Now what does that mean, pul halavan? Pul halavan means a bean. Ela'ema shi'uro kapul halavan. It means it's the size of a bean. Meaning once you see the fruit the size of a bean, so that's the same size of girua. Now again, that's just the grapes. But the point is, now we know that this is not the sheet of Rav Yossi, because remember, what did Rav Yossi say? Smadar. Smadar was that really early stage of the budding. That was sheet of Rav Yossi. And we acknowledge that the Chachamim don't agree with Rav Yossi, but now we're also going to acknowledge that even the Chachamim will argue with Rav Yossi, still at a really early stage of development, not smadar, but a little bit later, what we call boser, already now it's considered a fruit. And that's by the grapes. And when it comes to the dates, even earlier. So once again, all this comes back to Rabbi Eli. Rabbi Eli, how did you chop the tree down during the Shemitah year? V'ktanish arkel ans meshiyotziu. Ela Rabbi Eli, bidini stani ketz. So the Gemara gives a simple answer. Again, not elegant, but a simple answer defending Rabbi Eli. Rabbi Eli, what he cut down wasn't a regular date tree. You're right. If it was a regular date tree and it was during the Shemitah year, he'd be not allowed to cut it down. Because the fruit on it now has kedusha. The only thing you could do with that fruit is eat it. You can't do anything else with that fruit. You certainly cannot let it go to waste. And so therefore, you can only eat the fruit. Had it been a regular fruit tree, you can't cut it down. And again, the other issue, which the Gemara here doesn't discuss at all, is, hey, aren't you not allowed to cut down fruit trees in general? Right, Bal Tashchis, last week's Parsha. Good, so the Gemara doesn't discuss that. Okay? And it certainly deserves a discussion. But the Gemara is just coming at it from the perspective of Shemitah. So, what about the fact that Rabbi Eli cut down the tree? The answer is, bidinistani kates. What does that mean? If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi essentially writes that it's a type of tree where the dates don't grow anymore. Meaning that the dates only get to one stage of development, a very early stage of development. It doesn't grow anymore. What happens is that you just simply pluck these very young dates off the tree and you let them ripen off the tree. That's how Rashi explains it. So in other words, he's not wasting the fruit. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan.
Does it never ripen to no edible? Is that true?
If you take a look at Rashi, I mean, for purposes of honesty. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, "Einim es bashlam bo olamis v'godrin osam." Rashi says, "You harvest them benisan v'hein mis bashlis me elehem," and they ripen on their own. Bikli, in other words, you put them in some bowl and they ripen on their own. That's how Rashi explains it. Anyway, okay. So that's the defense. Now we've defended Rabbi Eli. Tana Rabbana. Now we go back to the Gemara, and here we go. From here until the Mishnah, essentially now. Times in the year that I'm allowed to eat the fruit of Peir Shvi'is, and the times that I'm not. As I explained just at the beginning of today's daf, the fact that we have fruit that grow on the tree during the Shemitah year means that the fruit has kedusha and has sanctity, and it can be eaten and only eaten, but only to the point where they are still in the field. Once they're no longer in the field, once the season is over, then I cannot eat it anymore. It's subject to beer. And again, what does beer mean? So machlokus amongst the Rishonim. The Rambam says beer means you have to actually destroy it. The Ravid says that you have to leave it in front of your house ownerless. And then, if you want, you can bring it back into your house, but you have to declare it hefker. What do we follow? Those of you who have been in Eretz Yisrael after Shemitah year, we follow like the Ravid. We don't follow like the Rambam. So what they do in Eretz Yisrael is that at the time of beer, it's all posted up all over Eretz Yisrael. At the time of beer, so what everyone does is they take their Shemitah fruit and produce and put it in the front of their house, but literally in front of their house, they're mafkir it, and anyone who wants to could take it, and if they want, they could take it back. So basically now, what we're going to be discussing is, when is the season over? Tanu Rabbanan ochlim anavim ashi chalo delios shel ochel. You're allowed to eat your grapes until there are no longer delios shel ochel. Okay, these are various places and areas where basically you're not going to see it anymore. We're not actually pointing to a calendaric date. We're just pointing to when they're no longer available. And if there are grapes growing even later into the season, so you could still keep your grapes in your house, meaning the season's not yet over. I can eat my olives until there are still olives in the town of Tekoa. Tekoa, modern-day Tekoa, is found in the Gush. You'll find it a little bit south of Gush Etzion. So the you pass Beis Lechem. Down in that area, so in Yehuda. So the and Rashi points out the Gemara Menachos, Tekoa was the best place to get olives. In fact, for the for the olives for the Beis HaMikdash, they would go down to Tekoa and get the olives from Tekoa. So the so as long as there are olives in Tekoa, it's still seasons for the olives, and that means that I can eat my olives during the Shemitah year. They have Kedusha Shviyas. I can eat the olives as long as there are olives that are in Tekoa. Again, it's not a calendaric time. It's just simply know your seasons. Know your olive seasons. Rabbi Lazar Amar Shechala Achron Shagush Chalav. Rabbi Eliezer says it's another place. Go to Gush Chalav, where the olives grow over there. Kadesh Ye Ani Yotze Ve'eno Motze Lo Benofa Ve'lo Bi'Karo. Where the poor people go out to look for the olives and they can't find the olives anywhere. Not in the leaves, not by the roots. Rova Ochlin Begrogris Ashe Chala Page Beis Hini. In terms of the eating of the figs, so you can eat figs until they're no longer figs in Page Beis Hini. Am Rabbi Yehuda lo hutzkru Page Beis Hini ela linyan meiser. No, Page Beis Hini was only mentioned lagabe meiser. Page Beis Hini v'yahini de tovine chayavim b'meiser. It's the best place to get figs, and it is obligated in meiser.
Everything is
really
meiser.
Why specifically figs? Yeah, and why Page Beis Hini? I'm not clear about that myself. That's right. I got a little bit caught up on that as well. Ochlim b'tamar ma'ashi chala achron she b'tzawar. Dates, you can eat dates during the Shemitah year until there are no more dates in the town of Tzawar. B'shem gamlel omer ochlim al-shal b'in akifin v'in ochlim al-shal b'in hashitzin. The dates have to be in a certain place found on the tree. Okay? I don't really understand where exactly we're holding on the tree. I don't understand the growth of the date well enough to know. I know which dates I like in the store, but that's about the extent of my date knowledge. Rimini the Gemara quotes another brisa. Okay, so basically, the first brisa that we just saw basically told us, as long as they're still in season, we're not up to beer yet. Once the season is over, so now there's a mitzvah of beer pears shviyas. Okay, and what we have not yet done is we haven't pointed to a calendar and said, that's when it's over. Now we're going to have another brisa, and this brisa is going to be much easier. For those of us who are not agriculturally aware, now the Bryce over here just says, here's your calendaric dates. Ochlim banavim ad Pesach. Grapes you can eat until Pesach. By the way, you realize we're talking not during the actual Shemitah year, we're talking about after the Shemitah year. Meaning, as long as the grapes are still in season, those grapes that grew during the Shemitah year, which have Kedushas Perishvias, can be eaten up until Pesach. Bezesim Arad Saras. Now when it comes to olives, the olive season is until Shavuos, Begrogris Ad Hanukkah. When it comes to figs, figs are till Hanukkah, Mitmarim Ad Purim, and dates can be eaten until Purim. Okay, so now Rav Yochanan Tarte Basraisa Machlif. So, and what we're going to do is these last two, meaning figs till Hanukkah and dates till Purim, he flips it. So he has dates till Chanukah and figs till Purim. Anyway, no, it starts from the Shemitah year.
So why is that saying Chanukah first and Purim and then Pesach and Sukkot?
Yeah, well, it doesn't go in calendaric order. That's a good point. I don't know why it does not, but it does not. So the Gemara thinks that this is a stira. The answer is very simple. It's not a stira. The Gemara says very simply, we're all describing the same thing. Meaning, the first brisa that we went through just told us, you know, look at the town of Tekoa, and look at Page Beis Hini. Look at these various towns to see when the season's over. Or, if you want, just look at a calendar. When's the last time you can eat grapes? Pesach. Meaning, by Pesach now, the season is officially over, and you can't eat grapes beyond Pesach. And again, according to the Ravid, which is the halacha that we follow, it's not the end. It's not a big deal, because then what you do at Pesach is you're mafkir, meaning you just simply take whatever grapes out of Kedusha Shvius and you put it in front of your house and you declare it to be hefker, and afterwards you can take it back in again. But in other words, but once up until Pesach, you don't have to worry about beer. Once Pesach rolls around, now you have this obligation of beer. My recollection of being in Eretz Yisrael during the post Shemitah year, I remember we had wine that was pressed from grapes that had Kedusha Shvius, and signs everywhere basically saying, don't spill a drop, meaning you gotta finish it, you gotta eat it all. So in the case of the wine, drink it all. The Gemara gives another suggestion. Another suggestion is maybe the brises aren't exactly in alignment with one another. But remember, as long as they're still out there, so then you can continue eating your peiros with Kedusha Shvias. So in other words, Chanukah, Purim, Pesach, and Shavuos, those are all your basic end of the seasons. But if you go out to Tekoa and you find that there's still olives growing out in Tekoa, so you can continue eating your olives even in your own home as well. Okay. Tanya Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Siman Laharim Milan. Okay, we're going to quote a Braisa. Okay, it's a Tosefta. Just looked at the side. It's a Tosefta. The Tosefta is going to tell us basically how to define. How do you define your mountains, your valleys, your rivers, your lowlands? How do you define them? Now, again, if you learn enough Gemara, you realize the question we're gonna deal with is who cares? why do we even care? Okay, so we'll get to that in just a moment. And why is it bringing it up now? Because we were just talking about, you'll see. You'll see the connection. So Simon Laharin Milan. So you want to know what a mountain is? So look for the trees that grow on the mountain that produce the gall nuts. Now, the famous gall nut, it's so famous I don't even know what it is, but anytime we have a discussion of writing down Sifrei Torah, Mezuzah, and Tefillin, so we know that the ink that's used is, I'm sorry, the hide that's used is produced with the gall nut. The gall nut is somehow used in the processing of the hide. That's the best I can help you with in terms of the famous gall nut. But anyway, Siman L'Harim Milan, apparently on the trees grow gall nuts. In fact, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says it's the only place where the gall nuts successfully grow. They only grow on mountains. They don't grow in rivers or in valleys. They only grow on mountains. Similar makam dekalim. You want to know a good valley? So palm trees. Palm trees grow in the valley. I know here in Florida they grow everywhere, but
they're not native.
Right? They're not. I know they're not native here. Yeah, that I know. So similar nechalim kanim. How about rivers? Reeds. Look for your reeds. Similar shvela shikma. What about the lowlands? So sycamore trees are specific to the lowlands. And the Gemara says, look, on this last point over here, I don't have a bona fide proof, but I have good evidence. Now, son, kishkamim, or shakmim, okay, asher b'shvela l'rov, okay, in the purchasing of the materials for the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, the Navi describes in the beginning of Malachim, how sycamores were purchased from the Shvela, from the lowlands. So again, good evidence that sycamores grow in the lowlands. Okay, good. So now we gave definitions, and right, you know Gemara to know well enough, the Gemara is going to ask, and so what? Siman Laharim Milan. Siman Lahamakim Dekalim. So we said a mountain, how do you know what a mountain is? A mountain because it's got gall nuts growing on it, and the valleys have the palm trees. And so what? Nafkamina libikurim. It's gonna play into the mitzvah of bikurim ditnan. Ein mivim bikurim ella mishiva saminim. So first halacha is when it comes to the mitzvah of bikurim. Bikurim only can come from the seven minim. Meaning, when it comes to trumas and maestros, they come from all fruit. Now, we've gone over this many times, according to Rashi and according to Tosfos. That's not true. Rashi's of the opinion that trumas and maestros only come from olives, dates, and wheat, and the five grains. But let's say, like the Rambam, let's say it's simple. All fruit is subject to trumas and maestros. When it comes to the mitzvah of Bikurim, Bikurim is only subject to the seven minim that are described, not in last week's Parsha, not 2 weeks ago, I think already 3 weeks ago, back in Parsha Sekev. Anyway, the Shiva Saminim. Velo mi dekalim shebeharim. And not, Elam Shiva Saminim. Velo mi dekalim shebeharim. Velo mi perish shebeamakim. And not only that, but it has to be quality fruit as well. Meaning, not only is the limitation of Bikurim not only to the seven species, where Eretz Yisrael is praised by those species, but it has to be the best of. So in other words, if it's a deco, if it's a date tree, now date is one of the seven minim, right? We know that. because one of the seven minim is devash, and devash is not honey, even though it's defined as honey, but it's date honey, meaning dates. It has to be a date that grows not on the mountain, because the best dates are not grown on the mountain. That which grows on the mountain are the gall nuts. The best dates are grown in the Amek. So the limitation of Bikurim is A, only the seven species, and B, only the best of the seven species. So that's why it's important to know, where do I find the best dates? I got to go to the Amek.
If it's not yours, you didn't grow it.
No, I understand. But in other words, assuming you're 100%, assuming that you have your date tree, and assuming that you have date trees both on the mountains and in the valley, go down to the valley, get the best of. Similar nachalim, kanim. As far as a nachal is concerned, a valley. So look for the reeds. Nafkamina la nachal etan for the process of the egla arufa. End of last week's parsha. Similar shvela shikma, and as far as the shvela is concerned, sycamore nafkamina la mekachomemkar. Okay, and it comes back to eBay. I mean, everything comes back to eBay. Okay, in other words, and this is the Gemara's go-to move. The Gemara does this all the time. Meaning, what's the point of giving definitions? Very simple. Because when I'm selling on eBay, a lowland. Okay, a real estate sold on eBay? I don't know. I don't visit that with any type of regularity. But in other words, and I'm saying eBay is only as an example. In other words, anytime there's any type of commercial activity, commerce between two parties, if I say to somebody, "Hi, I've got a shvela," right? I have a shvela to sell you. So how do I know that there was an agreement of mine between the buyer and seller? How does the buyer know if, in fact, it really is a shvela? So if there are sycamores growing in it, so then that's proof positive that, in fact, it was a shvela. So, and if it wasn't sycamores growing there, so then the buyer could say to the seller, "Hey, that's not a shvela that you sold me," and then that would be considered a mekach tos. That would be now a voided transaction. So the Gemara says, "Hashadas eslachi kula nam lemekach memkar." And the Gemara says, "Look, once we're here, now, in other words, once the purpose of giving definitions is in order to identify what is in fact being sold, and there was an agreement of mind between the buyer and seller, so then this is an afkamina for all the above as well." Okay, Adkan. All right, that took us through really the more complicated part of today's daf. And again, just quick summary. Okay, the first Mishnah, we just finished the first Mishnah of the fourth parak of Psachim. And in quick summation, basically, Minog, that's going to be the topic over the entirety of the fourth parak of Psachim. The first Minog that we dealt with was the Minog of working in the morning of Erev Pesach. Some communities do have the Minog, some communities do not have the Minog, of abstention of Malacha during the morning of Erev Pesach. Afternoon already, that's a din, that's a halacha. And it just depends on where you live. And then the Mishnah went on to describe Peiros Shvius, and we just kind of finished off today the tail end of that discussion, some of the details regarding fruit that grew during the Shemitah year. We discussed this morning up until now, at what point exactly is it still in the field, when is it subject to Bior, and a defense today of Rabbi Eli, who cut down a date tree, a palm tree, during the Shemitah year. How can you do that? Once there are actual dates on the tree, then it has Kedusha Shvius, and therefore you're not allowed to destroy it. How could he cut it down? And the Gemara defended his action. Okay. Next. Now, from this point going forward now, we're going to leave the world of Pesach for the next little bit, meaning until we get to the end of the fourth parak. It's not that long from now. Nun Zion? Yes. Right, Daf Nun Zion. It's going to be the last off of this discussion. Until we get to the end of the fourth parak, now we're going to be discussing various minhagim that existed at the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara. Some minhagim stand till this very day. Some minhagim do not stand till this very day. But we're going to be discussing various minhagim. Makom shenagolim kor behem adakol anachrim mochrim. Makom shelo nagolim kor ein mochrim. Okay. Do we sell small animals to goyim? So some communities have the minhag to sell. And some communities have the minhag not to sell. Okay? Now, why? Well, in other words, why would there be a minhag not to sell small animals to Goyim? So stay tuned. I'm going to explain that in just a moment. But in other words, that's a minhag. And but when it comes to large animals, makom shelo nag. I'm sorry. Uvechol makom ein mochrim lanachrim. I'm sorry. What did I do? Okay, thank you. Okay, but the Mishnah says when it comes to Behem Agasa, when it comes to large animals, there, everybody does not sell large animals to Goyim. Okay.
What about the whole deal with before then? You give him, you sold the shares in.
Give me a moment. I'll come back to that. Maybe. But, the Mishnah says that, okay, so the starting point for the discussion, really, the Mishnah, like, would have been better if we made this point first, and then we would have gone to smaller animals. Okay, look, first of all, in the animal kingdom, there are small animals and large animals. Small animals are like your goat and your sheep, and large animals are like your cows, and, fine, and your bulls, and horses. Okay, basically any animal is as tall as you. Okay, large animal. Okay, any animal that comes up to your waist, a small animal. Okay, just a simple way of dividing the animal kingdom. Large animals, we do not sell to Goyim. Now, the Mishnah gives no explanation why not, but we don't. And then when it comes to small animals, some have the minhag to sell to Goyim, and some don't. Rashi says the reason why there are communities that don't have the minhag not to sell to Goyim is because once we get into the habit of selling small animals to Goyim, so then the fear is that the next step is going to be we're going to sell large animals to Goyim, and that we're not allowed to do. Okay, the obvious question, why not? Why can't we sell large animals to Goyim? What's wrong with that? So if you take a look at Rashi over here, I'm going to just quickly summarize Rashi, even though Rashi is not very long-winded or long-worded, but Rashi requires a lot of explanation. Let me just quickly summarize Rashi's points. We know that when it comes to animals that we own, we Jews own, so those animals have to keep Shabbos. It's a pasuk in Chumash, right? Our animals need to be Shomer Shabbos. In fact, we spent back in Masechta Shabbos, we spent an entire parak discussing this in Masechta Shabbos. It was either the fifth or sixth parak of Shabbos. Okay, I guess you could look it up and you can check out which one I'm right about. Fifth or sixth. Okay, one of those two. All right. Anyway, animals have to be Shomer Shabbos. So now, what's the problem? If I sell an animal to a guy, it's no longer my animal. That's fine. Meaning, the animal's not going to be in violation of Shabbos. But if I get into this habit of selling an animal to a guy, so then the guy's going to come over to me and say, "Look, do me a favor. I want to buy this animal from you, but I'd like to I'd like to test drive the animal, right? See, it's a strong animal. Can I borrow your animal?" Well, I'll be tempted to say yes, hopefully, which will lead to a sale. And now he's borrowing the animal from me, and if he borrows it over the course of Shabbos, that's my animal, it's still mine, and it's going to be working on Shabbos. So in other words, the concern is going to be that once I get into this habit of selling animals to Goyim, so then we're going to lead to a scenario in which my animals are going to be working on Shabbos. She'ela. Or Rashi says, what about Schirus? What if I don't sell him the animal, but I rent him the animal? Well, if I rent him the animal, it's still fundamentally my animal. Just he has the rights to the animal. Well, then I'm also going to be violating Shvisas Behema. Or Rashi gives another scenario of Nisyuni, which means that, let's say, we're talking about selling, and he wants to see the animal perform. So what do I do? So on Shabbos, without thinking, I instruct the animal to start plowing, or I instruct the animal to start harvesting, or whatever activities the animals do. So that's what's called the Isra of Mechamer, which is basically Shvisas Behemto, even one step beyond that, meaning I'm encouraging the animal to work on Shabbos. I'm leading the animal to work on Shabbos. So again, the entire issue is over here, is that once I'm in the habit of selling these animals to a guy, so it's going to lead to a scenario where my animal is going to end up working on Shabbos either because I lent it to the guy, I rent it to the guy, or I demonstrate how the animal is going to work, and I do that demonstration on Shabbos. Okay. That's why there is a... Now, I'm going to say prohibition, although you'll see in just a moment, it may not be a bona fide prohibition. That's why when it comes to large animals, the Mishnah says don't do it. Don't sell them to Goyim. Small animals depends on the minhag. If the minhag of your community is to sell small animals, then that's fine. If the minhag of your community is not to sell, so then don't sell. Okay? But when it comes to large animals, it's not a minhag, it's a din. Now, agalim v'sayachim shlemim shvurim. Now, when it comes to large animals, says the Mishnah, it don't matter whether they're young, whether they're old, whether they're working, or whether they're broken. Meaning, you could make the argument, well, it's a broken animal. Meaning, let's say it doesn't work anymore. It's alive, it's not dead, but it's broken. Okay, one of the tires of the animal fell off. So, you could make the argument, well, this animal is not going to work, and so therefore there should be no problem. Essentially, the Mishnah says, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah says, I don't care. Meaning, if it's a large animal, you cannot sell it to a guy. Rav Yehuda Matir B'Shvur, Rav Yehuda says, if it's a broken animal, then you can sell it to a guy. So Rav Yehuda does make the exception of a broken animal. And Ben Becerra Matir B'Shvur, Ben Becerra says, you're allowed to sell horses to non-Jews. Why? So if you take a look at Rashi, and again, I'm just going to paraphrase Rashi. Well, because when it comes to a horse, the horse, it does not carry loads. What does a horse carry? People. And what do we know when it comes to the carrying of people on Shabbos? That's an Isser de Rabbana, not an Isser de Araisa. The concept of Chai Nosei Es Atzmo. You go back to Masechta Shabbos, where we discuss this topic at length. So carrying people is only an Isser de Rabbana. So this rabbinic concern of selling animals will not go so far as to include the sale of horses, because even if I give him my horse on Shabbos, he'll be at worst violating Isser de Rabbanan. So Ben Becerra says you're allowed to sell horses to non-Jews. Okay, good. That's the Mishnah's topic of selling of animals to Goyim. Interesting. You know what the Shulchan Aruch writes? In other words, if it was just for the Mishnah, one would say that even nowadays you're not allowed to sell animals to non-Jews. Now, most of us are not in the farming industry. I only have one friend in this world who is in the farming industry, right? My friend down in Hollywood, Dr. Berman. But most of us are not in the farming industry, so for most of us, this doesn't matter one way or another. But if you can go back to a time when much more of us Jews were in the farming industry, this prohibition applies even nowadays. The Shulchan Aruch writes, nowadays we sell animals to Goyim. So why he writes that? That's a larger discussion. But the Shulchan Aruch says that that nowadays we do, even though the Mishnah says that we do not. Okay, just to pique your interest. Makom shenagu lechol tzliba lele pesachim ochlen, makom shenagu shol lechol ein ochlen. Roasted meat on Pesach, right? I said we're no longer going to discuss Pesach. I take it back. We're going to discuss a little bit more about Pesach, and that is eating roasted meat on Pesach. Now we're talking about after the Churban Habayis, right, where we don't have a Karban Pesach anymore. Can I eat roasted meat? So the Mishnah says it depends on what your minhag is. Some have the minhag of not eating roasted meat on the Seder night. Some have the minhag where they do eat roasted meat on the Seder night. It depends on whatever your minhag is. Okay. Why wouldn't you eat roasted meat on the Seder night? It's not the Karban Pesach. It's just roasted meat. And we'll see in just a moment why not. I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Asul Aladim Shom Rav Asul Zila Pesach Chub Mei Meshenir Kem Makdish Behem Toho V'Ochel Kashim B'Chutz. Now, Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, here's what you're not allowed to do on the Seder night or any time prior to the Seder night. You can't point to a piece of meat. Now, it's meat. It's not an animal. Right? It's already been shechted. You can't point to a piece of meat and say, hey, this is for Pesach. Now, really, all you meant was that, you know, I'm looking forward to eat this at the Seder night. Even though I'm pretty much stuffed with matzah, but you know what? That's a great piece of meat. I'm going to eat that the Seder night. You can't say that. That's a no-no. The reason why is because the appearance is that you actually designated that as a Karban Pesach. Now, obviously, that's a piece of meat. You can't designate that as a Karban Pesach. But maybe what you meant was that as an animal it was a Karban Pesach, and I shechted it as a Karban Pesach, and that meat is coming from the Karban Pesach. And the problem with all that, of course, is we don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore. And for us in Boca, it even presents a larger problem. We don't live in Yerushalayim, and we're not in the Beis HaMikdash, and it's Kachin B'chutz, then. Okay. So, Amra Papa Dafka Basar Avachiti Lo. Demintel Apischach Kamar. And this is only true by meat. This is not going to be a problem by wheat. Meaning, if I have wheat, and I say, this wheat's for Pesach, like, nobody worry. Like, no one's thinking that what you meant was, is that this wheat is going to have the Kedusha of the Karban Pesach. I'm going to sell the... That's not nothing to concern yourself with. Ubasar lo meisve. And the Gemara now objects with the following objection. Amar of Yosei tudis ish romi hinek is b'nei romi lecho gedim ukulasam b'lele psachem. An interesting character, Rav Yosi Tudus. Sorry. Rav Yosi tells us that Tudus Ish Romi. Now, who is he? Who was he? We'll get to in just a moment. But what he instructed the Jews of Rome to do, now obviously this is after the Churban HaBayis, is that he instructed them to eat roasted goat on Lel Pesach. So in other words, he told people to eat roasted, and by the way, gidim mekulasim, roasted, not just roasted, roasted the same way the Karban Pesach was roasted. It's what's called mekulas. You take a look at Rashi. Rashi goes through a whole explanation of the word mekulas. But basically, how was the Karban Pesach roasted? Remember? Remember. Yeah. Sure, of course. Yeah. We all remember. You sure? But in other words, it was skewered on a spit. And what they would do is they would take the intestines, then they would wrap the intestines and put it right on the outside so that you'd have not only your Karban Pesach roasted, but together with the intestines as well. Okay, one of my experiences over the summer, my vacation, I went down to Argentina, which of course, that's par for the course, and I ate intestine down in Argentina. Not a pleasant experience, but it was definitely an experience. Chinchulín is what they call it down there. Anyway, so the Karban Pesach was roasted with the intestines right along the outside. Tudus Ish Romi told the Jews of Rome, here, they we'll do this. In other words, even though we don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore, and even though the Churban, will do this. Shalchu lo, they sent a letter to Tudus and they said, don't do that. El male Tudus ata gazrani alecha nidui. We want to put you in Chayim, we just can't. For reasons which the Gemara is going to explain in just a moment. Sha'ata machal Yisrael kachem b'chutz, because you're feeding the Jewish people of Rome Churban outside the Beis HaMikdash. This is a serious violation of Shchutei Chutz, of Achilas Kachin Bechutz. He can't do that. Meaning, now, Kachin Bechutz HaKadacha, now the Gemara says, now, is he really doing that? Ela Eima Karov LaHachal Es Yisrael Kachin Bechutz. The Gemara acknowledges, he's not feeding them Kachin Bechutz, but it kind of looks like that. Meaning, because he's instructing them to roast the Karban Pesach in the same manner in which we done in the Beis HaMikdash. So, Lachal Yisrael Kachin Bechutz. Mekulos Vinshei Mekulos Lo. Now, the Gemara notes, isn't all this a problem because he specifically instructed them to eat it Mekulas, which is, again, the same way that they used to roast the Karban Pesach. So, the Gemara says, Amre. So, the Gemara says, look, meat is always going to be an issue. Mekulas, if it happens to be prepared in this special fashion, where you have the animal on the spit and the intestines right outside the animal. So, loshna amar, loshna lo amar. There, it so resembles what we used to do in the Karban Pesach, so then that's always going to be an issue. She'ena makulas, now if I just simply roast it, but not with the intestines around the outside, so then pirshin lo pirshlo. So then it's only going to be a problem if I specify and I say, this is for Pesach. Rav Acha masni lalah masitzin k'Rabbi Shimon. So Rav Acha says that the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon. So instead of saying Rabbi Yosi, he has it as Rabbi Shimon. Okay. In other words, remember when we were first presented with the statement, it was Rabbi Yosi saying it. According to another version, it's Rabbi Shimon. So Maskel Rav Sheshes Bishlam Lamandet Nilek Rabbi Yosi Nicha. I certainly understand the author of this being Rabbi Yosi, but El Lamandamak Rabbi Shimon Minicha Vatana Rabbi Shimon Poter Shalon is Nadiv Kederachem is Nadim. Now to do this really quickly, and I'm going to do this really quickly and maybe a little too quickly, but basically the issue becomes the following issue. Rashi explains, and I'm just going to paraphrase Rashi. Let's say a person goes over to barley and says, I'm offering this barley as a mincha offering. Okay, now that's nonsense. Okay, why? Because there is no barley offering. Now I know there are exceptions. The Sota offers barley, and we do bring barley on the second day of Pesach, but those are your exceptions. Meaning all other menachos come from wheat. So if I make the declarative statement that I'm bringing a mincha from barley, that should in effect be a ridiculous statement and totally ignored. Rabbi Shimon says, correct. It's a ridiculous statement and it's meant to be ignored. Right? Right? That's the statement of Rabbi Shimon. So, I'm sorry. And what's the Gemara's point? The Gemara's point over here is that if that's true, so now let's go to the gedi mekulas, right? The roasted gedi. In other words, we're not in the Beis HaMikdash. We're outside the Beis HaMikdash. We're in Rome. It's after the Chorban Bayis. So if the author of the statement was Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon ignores ridiculous statements. So here, if I'm in Rome, out after the Chorban Bayis, and I say, hey, this is a Karban Pesach, just ignore it. Meaning, it's just a ridiculous statement. Oh, I'm saying, also true. But in other words, the concern that it's kashim b'chutz, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not. I ignore all ridiculous statements. So Amalei Rav Inla Rav Ashi Amanda Masna Lek Rav Yosi Minicha. So the Gemara says, okay, but so you were happier with Rav Yosi being the author of this teaching. Okay, v'amar Rav, Rabbi Shimon, b'shitas Rav Yosi Amra. The Gemara says, you know, Rabbi Shimon, his position that I ignore ridiculous statements, do you know why? It's platformed on the position of Rav Yosi. Because Rav Yosi says that whenever a person makes a statement, I must take the totality of the statement. Da'amar af b'gmar dvarav adam nitfas. And so when a person says, I'm going to bring a mincha of barley, ignore it, because take the word mincha, put it together with barley. There is no mincha of barley. Again, there are exceptions, but generally speaking, there's no mincha of barley. So I take the totality of the statement, I ignore it. If I say, right, in Rome, after the destruction of the temple, hey, let's bring this carbon as a carbon Pesach. There's no Beis HaMikdash. I'm in Rome. Ignore it. So my love mid Rabbi Shimon sever like Rav Yosi, Rav Yosi nami sever like Rabbi Shimon. Now, if Rabbi Shimon's platform on Rav Yosi, doesn't that mean Rav Yosi agrees to Rabbi Shimon? The Gemara answers very simply: lo. Rabbi Shimon sever like Rav Yosi, v'lo Rabbi Yosi sever like Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara says no. Look, you're right. Rabbi Shimon has to hold like Rabbi Yosi, but that doesn't mean that Rav Yosi necessarily holds like Rabbi Shimon. So we're fine. Meaning this episode of Tudus is brought to us by Rav Yosi. Okay, allow me 2 more minutes. We're just going to finish to the next Mishnah. Now remember, Tudus in Rome said told his Jews in Rome, right? For Seder night, we're roasting Karban Pesach. Now again, not Karban Pesach, but like they used to do back in the Beis HaMikdash. And what was the response of the rabbis? We want to put you in Cherem, but we can't. Why not? Why couldn't they? The Gemara has 2 suggestions. Either because he was a big Talmid Chacham, or because he was a political power. Which one is correct? Tashma. So the Gemara is going to opt with the first option, that he was a Talmid Chacham. Ozu Darish Tudus Ish Romi. And the reason why we know he's a Talmid Chacham is because he arrived at halachic conclusions based on a Kav HaChomer. Chananya, Mishael, and Azariah, contemporaries of Daniel. So they went into the Kivshan Eish, they jumped into the furnace. Nasu Kavachomer Ba'atzman, Mitzfar De'im. I have a feeling everybody here knows this. They made a Kavachomer based on the frogs. Which frogs? the Makos frogs. Now they have no commandment of Kedushas Hashem, and meanwhile, in Parshas Va'era, we learned how the frogs jump right into the oven, even though it meant that they were going to commit suicide. Now it was a hot oven, it wasn't a cold oven, because it says Misharos, and the dough is only by next to the oven when the oven is hot. So they jumped into the hot oven, meaning they killed themselves. Now we, Chanan Mishal Vazaria said, we have this obligation of Kedushas Hashem, Allah is Kama Vakama, we should for sure jump into the Kivshan Ha'esh, we should jump into the furnace. Okay? I know you can argue with the logic, right? Adopting a practice based on what frogs do. But anyway, but that's not our point. Our point right now is that Tudus Yishromi was a Talmid Chacham. He was fluent in Kavah Chomers and Halacha. So in other words, he was a Talmid Chacham. Rav Yosi bar Avin Amar Matam Alelakish Al Talmid Chachamim Haya. Another explanation of who he was. He was a supporter of Talmid Chachamim. He was an investor, a good one. Adam Rav Yochanan Kol Amatam Alelakish Al Talmid Chachamim Zochev Yosef Yishiva Shamalah Shenemar Ki Betzel HaChachma Betzel HaKesef. Tudus Yishromi was an investor for Talmid Chachamim. Talmid Chachamim took their money, invested it with him. He did good with their money. He brought back a return. And he also gets a chelik in Yeshiva Shamala. And that's another suggestion of who Tudus Yishromi was. Either way, that's why the Chachamim, even though they did not like his practice, they nevertheless at least had enough deference towards him where they left him alone, but they acknowledged they did not like his practice. As you, I'm sure we all know, the established minhag is, and this we all pretty much are universal, we don't eat roasted meat on Pesach. You know how strong our minhag is, by the way. Not only do we not eat roasted meat on Pesach, we don't eat roasted chicken on Pesach. Right now, chicken, of course, can never become a carbon Pesach. It doesn't matter. The accepted minhag is that we eat nothing roasted on the Seder night. Everything has to be somehow based in some liquid. How much liquid? I'll let your wives decide.